with the Republican control of both houses of Congress now, do you begin trying to work with the president on issues where you can find common ground, such as the military suicide prevention bill that you've worked on in your own committee? Or do you go after him right away on Keystone Pipeline, repealing parts of Obamacare, when that could provoke the kinds of fights that would just lead us to more gridlock?
Well, I think it's time that the president cooperated with the Congress and the American people. I mean, there are a lot of issues that are overwhelmingly popular with the American people that the president has threatened vetoes on or is opposed to. The Senate's going to do what elected the Republican majority. We're going to put the bills on the president's desk that the American people want to see and then let the president do what he needs to do. Hopefully, there are going to be areas where we can find common ground. Hopefully, the American people will speak out and the president will hear them. But I think it's our obligation to deliver on what we promised during the campaign. That's Keystone Pipeline, 40-hour work week, Iran sanctions, things of that nature.
On the 40-hour work week, that's part of the Affordable Care Act right now. Employers would provide coverage if someone works just 30 hours, correct? And the Congress would want to raise that to 40.
That's correct, right. Which has been in the established work week since the labor movement in the early 1900s.
But for those who are uninsured, would an unintended consequence of that might be, okay, employers would simply raise their work week to 39 or something like that. In other words, get more hours out of them without having to provide coverage.
The unintended consequence of the 30-hour work week has been people being employed for 29 hours a week, and so people having to have two part-time jobs rather than one full-time job in order to avoid the insurance. So the unintended consequence is there either way.
Is Obamacare, though, a fact? In other words, do Republicans in the Senate and the House go after full repeal, or with people signing up and the bad rollout of last year slowly becoming a little more smooth, is Obamacare pretty much a fact, and we're just going to work on how the Republicans want to change it?
The facts are that most of the members of the United States Senate and the Republican Party and almost all in the House ran on repealing Obamacare and replacing it. I think there's got to be a repeal vote. Now, obviously, with the president being in the White House, you have to have 68 votes to override a veto. That may be hard to do, but nonetheless, that doesn't mean you don't try.
But so would a repeal vote just be symbolic and cause the kinds of fights that might stall progress on other issues?
Well, the veto would be just as symbolic as the vote would be.
But it would have some effect if you don't have the votes.
But then it would give us a chance to get a vote to override, which is an issue those Democrats in marginal states or competitive states would have to look at very closely in terms of what the people in their state want.
On immigration, one of the things that many in the Republican side want to do is to roll back the president's executive action on some of the people who were brought here as children. I guess it's some 5 million folks who might qualify to stay in the country under that. Would the GOP, though, go so far as to hold up funding for the Homeland Security Department, which is what some in the Congress want to do?
The president has the veto pen. Congress has the cash register and the ability to spend money. So you have to use the leverage that you have. The president's used his veto pen, his executive orders, very effectively. I think now that we have the majority in the Senate and the House, we'll use the appropriations process very effectively, as we did with the Cromnibus that passed in December.
But especially given what's happened recently in Paris, for instance, and in other places, does it make sense to say, okay, the Homeland Security Department is where we're going to use the power of the purse?
Dennis, that's the main point. What happened in Paris is an immigration system in Europe that's gone amok. There are almost a million Muslim residents outside the outskirts of Paris in small cities that have been built in housing projects. They've immigrated into other European countries and Scandinavian countries. Immigration and illegal immigration is a huge issue worldwide, and it's important that we get our hands around in the United States of America. We have a land bridge from the world through Central and South America into the United States that's not being enforced. It needs to be enforced.
But can't that be done with an immigration bill that, for all of the efforts of people not only in the White House but in some folks in both parties, has stalled?
Well, the president's going to have a chance to sign that. You've got to remember, Dennis, that we've only had the majority since the 6th of January when everybody was sworn in. That's 4 days, but that bill's coming.
An immigration bill passed the Senate, and the president had indicated he would support it. It stalled in the House. Now, is there any chance that the House would change its stand on that bill?
I think everybody needs to try and cooperate and find common ground on restoring border security and restoring a legal immigration process that works. Hopefully we'll be able to do that.
How would you be able to do that, do you think?
By sitting down and dialoguing and talking about it rather than demagoguing it.
because we have a divided government now, a lot of folks talk about compromise but say, okay, it's for the other side. Where do you want the president to move, and where can Republicans move to meet him
halfway? The word is not compromise. The word is cooperation. It's about time we had some cooperation from the White House, and I'm ready to cooperate with the White House if they'll sit around across the table and honestly deal with us. The president has not done that for 6 years. I hope he will now that we have a majority, but cooperation is the key.
But aren't some in your own party, Ted Cruz is one probably more visible example, saying, look, we're going to just hold out for everything we can get, and the president has to be the only one who moves?
I don't comment on the politics of other members of the United States Congress. I have my own wagon loaded, and I'm full of my own wagon. But I think cooperation is the name of the game, and trying to find common ground where you can on the problems that face the American people. All the issues we've talked about in this interview, from the 30-hour work week to Iranian sanction bills to things of that nature, that you try and find common ground that's in the best interest of the American people.
Won't you need some Democrats, though, to pass some of the things you want to, because there may be some on the GOP side who say they don't go far enough?
We got 12 of them yesterday on Keystone Pipeline.
You are the new chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the Senate. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
You and others worked on a military suicide prevention bill, which ended up being blocked by one Republican in the Senate who's no longer there, Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. Do you expect that bill to move quickly once things really get rolling in the Senate?
I do.
What would you like to do, and do you have a timetable for it?
Not one that I'm going to publish on the media before I've had my first committee meeting with my members, but we're going to have a meeting the week after next, the organizational meeting of the committee. I've already met with Secretary McDonald along with Ranking Member Blumenthal and the House Chairman Jeff Miller and Corrine Brown, who's the Ranking Member in the House. We've got a timetable set to deal with some of the issues that are before us, and that's one of them. I won't give you an exact date, but it'll be early in the session.
Some in your party have expressed some sort of reservations about the cost of the bill, $20-plus million, I believe. Is that right?
And that's one of the things you have to deal with in the timetable. You have to have a set aside and pay for. But $20 million is a lot of money if you're talking about your net worth. If you're talking about the United States appropriations process out of $1.2 trillion, it's a pretty easy amount of money to find.
The other concern they had, though, is that it might duplicate some things that we already have in terms of access to mental health care or recruiting psychiatrists or evaluating programs.
Senator Coburn was an outstanding member of the United States Senate and one of the most disciplined fiscal conservatives that there has been and ever will be in the United States Senate. And he was right. That's why we're going to find offsets, and we're not going to have duplicative legislation.
Offsets where? Do you have any idea where you start to look to find that money elsewhere?
I'm not going to discuss that on the air until I start talking to the people who would be affected.
For the next 2 years, you have a Senate campaign going. There's going to be, obviously, campaigns among the Republicans for the Republican presidential nomination. Do you think the Congress can get anything done, number one? And number two, are you worried that there might be primary challenges from your own party?
Well, the only thing I worry about in terms of challenges is the challenge to me personally. I mean, it's my challenge to get out there and earn the respect and the votes of the people of Georgia to go back to the United States Senate. That's my challenge, and I'm going to meet that challenge. The only person I can control is me. I can't control what other people think or do, so I'm going to worry about me doing what the people of Georgia expect me to do, and I'm going to be happy to do that. I will point out one thing, too, Dennis. In the last 75 years, two presidents were the most productive presidents of the United States, Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan. Both of them were most productive when they had a divided government where they didn't control the Congress, but they controlled the executive branch. When Clinton lost the majority in the House and Newt Gingrich led the revolution, he signed welfare reform after vetoing it twice. President Reagan reformed immigration, he reformed tax policy, and he reformed Social Security with Tip O'Neill, a Democrat, running the Congress. So divided government oftentimes forces the cooperation that I was talking about a minute ago. So let's not write off the next 2 years summarily at the beginning just because it's going to be a presidential race. This is going to be a presidential race anyway. Let's just make sure we have a productive Congress the next 2 years.
Georgia Republican Senator Johnny Isakson, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dennis.
This time. We appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.